It's the Security Weekly News, episode 195, getting close to 200. How about that? This is the week of 13 March, 2022. We got ASCII porn, pirate hunting, the Ukraine and all the other angles on that, Conti gang, Pandora gang, mobile device hell, and crypto ATMs, along with Jason Wood on this edition of the Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week, your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
Cybercriminals are working overtime. Last year in the fourth quarter alone, phishing attacks disguised as COVID testing information increased by 521%. Barracuda has identified 13 types of email threats and how cybercriminals use them to steal money from your company or personal information from your employees and customers. Find out about the 13 email threat types and how Barracuda can provide complete email protection for your teams, your customers, and your reputation. Get your free ebook at securityweekly.com/Barracuda. That's securityweekly.com/Barracuda. Monitoring and maintaining compliance is a never-ending struggle with a high price of failure. FireMon helps customers meet complex and varying compliance requirements. FireMon has fully customizable reporting, analytics, assessments, and dashboards to meet the compliance needs of any organization. With FireMon, compliance reports take a tenth of the time, and real-time continuous compliance eliminates the anxiety and headaches of audit preparation. Improve security outcomes by improving security operations with FireMon. Visit securityweekly.com/FireMon to learn more.
Well, as Blackbeard, Yellowbeard, Nobeard, Beardsley McBeardface, and Whitebeard all learned, nothing stops pirates like lawsuits. Yeah. So, you know, some of the very first security stuff I ever did that was actually like policy kind of stuff, I got called about consulting, was about Napster. And Napster was a music streaming service way back when, and they basically broke like every rule in the book for copyrights and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, they were like, you can upload your music. I mean, when I was in high school, you know, everybody made the, like, one person would buy a copy of an LP record and make cassette tapes of it, which I know is illegal, but it was a long time ago. But Napster kind of formalized all that and put it out there for commercial use. And, you know, people went after them. And Sony and a lot of other companies that own music rights started sending all these nasty letters to Napster, who ignored them. But they also started sending them to entities like universities that they could show were downloading music. And so, like, I got called in because we got hit with one, and I had to go tell the student, I wrote them a letter because I didn't want to go face them, but I had to tell the student that they owed a lot of money for illegal downloads because Sony said, we're going to sue you for like each one of these individual downloads, and you're going to have to pay us for the rights to use this song, and it was like a lot of money. And so, you know, but fast forward to the day, and 24 film studios have been doing something very similar, and they recently filed a lawsuit against TorGuard for not maintaining logs, imagine that, and encouraging online piracy by basically marketing their product as a way to, well, you know, conduct online piracy. I mean, literally, you know, that was just sort of their whole shtick was like, are you tired of paying for this? Well, hey, come over here. This same group had already filed a $10 million damage suit against LiquidVPN for the same reasons. So according to this story, TorGuard has apparently agreed to settle. And they decided the way to get an agreement was they were going to block torrents on TorGuard. So BitTorrent is, of course, a common way for people to download pirated software, pirated movies, pirated music, pirated everything. And I guess TorGuard wasn't blocking anything, and they don't keep logs of anything, so they can't really figure out how to do what they did against Napster, because they would literally come at you and demand to know who these IP addresses belong to and so forth. Anyway, this went on. The settlement went on to say that TorGuard had agreed to use commercially reasonable efforts to block BitTorrent traffic on its servers with a firewall. The lawsuits, in addition, have targeted Surfshark, VPN Unlimited, ZenMate, PIA, and ExpressVPN, and probably others in very similar ways. Now, I don't know what happens if you run a VPN over TorGuard. So if you, like, have a second VPN and, you know, I mean, I'm not sure they'd be able to identify that it was a torrent if that was what was going on. You know, so that gets back into that decryption at the border conversation and all that kind of stuff. And just like Napster, you know, yeah, they stopped Napster, but did it really stop music piracy? No. In fact, it just formalized it. And so I don't know that you're going to stop video piracy. They've tried everything. I remember when they used to have VHS tapes and they had all this like encryption on them and all this crap. Lots of people, myself included, learned to hack all sorts of things because of that stuff. Anyway, well, it wouldn't be the news without the Ukraine. And so we got several stories about this because that war is still going on. Nobody's been able to convince Mr. Putin that he needs to stop. And so far, he just keeps on, I don't know, flailing ahead. The Ukraine Computer Emergency Response Team has issued a warning that there are fake Windows antivirus updates being distributed. They don't know who's doing it. You can guess. The updates, instead of updating your Windows Defender or whatever, install Cobalt Strike and other malware instead of updating the antivirus on the machine. So far, this seems to be targeted only at Ukrainian speakers, this specific attack they were talking about. But it is, it's a phishing email. It advises the reader to download critical security update, which is has an attached file called Bitdefender Windows Update Package.exe. And of course, that's what it is. But the downloader, there is another downloader using this that is a French website that is apparently down, and another server called nursoft.me, which was found by the Malware Hunter team that was, and that server was acting as a command and control server for the whole campaign. So as we mentioned earlier, with all the interest in supporting the Ukraine, I mean, a lot of people, I've been being asked this, I know other people that are being asked this, and you get mail all the time. But there's so much interest in supporting the Ukraine, you may want to rethink your warnings to your users about these scams, because we've already reported on numerous scams that revolve around donating money, that involve, you know, contributions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and more are on the way. So be warned. This one was in Ukrainian, but that doesn't mean somebody won't translate it and keep it running. In that same light, for the first time ever, it is a war that anyone can get in on. I don't think we've ever seen this kind of thing before, but according to this article, over 400,000 hackers have volunteered worldwide to help the Ukraine attack Russia. Russia, of course, is hacking back, despite that they deny that they're doing it. In the first 3 days of the invasion of Ukraine, attacks against the Ukraine went up by about 196%, as someone... Is it Russia? I don't know. Attacked them both virtually before they began attacking them kinetically. Attacks against Russia only went up by 4% during those days. But then the Ukrainian government formed the IT Army of the Ukraine and said, hey, you want to sign up for the IT Army of the Ukraine? Here's the form. Sign up and you're in. And a lot of people did begin taking action because, unlike, say, volunteering to go to the front lines with a rifle, you could do this from wherever you are, assuming it's legal. And after that initial tweet, 308,000 people, joined a Telegram group that was committed to this. Anonymous also announced they were joining the cyber war and started running actions against Russia. And widespread denial of service and server outages and so forth began occurring in Russia, and there were apparently some break-ins and so forth on different Russian servers and sites. Russia has just constantly and persistently denied any knowledge of cyber warfare, and their official statement is that, quote, they do not engage in cyber war nor cyber attacks. And the Russian embassy then tweeted that it, quote, has never conducted and does not conduct any malicious operations in cyberspace, which is probably a true statement because the Russian embassy probably doesn't do that. They did mention something about killing a moose and a squirrel. But, you know, you can, of course, also join, if you want to, the Ukrainian Foreign Legion. And there's any number of websites that have guidance on how to do that. And if you join the Ukrainian Foreign Legion, you actually go to the Ukraine and, you know, get out your kit and go to the front line. And we know some people doing that if you want to fight in the kinetic war as well. So a very different approach to warfare is sort of shaping up. Now, what I would warn you again is be careful about fake websites and phishing campaigns when you're trying to join up. be careful if you are attacking foreign powers, that A, it's legal in your location, and B, that you understand the risk that you're attacking a foreign nation state who might just get a little bit ornery about that. So beware, and be legal. But all that aside, good job, everybody. A new Cold War is also springing up between Silicon Valley and Moscow. This has erupted in the wake of Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. So, and now it's starting to sound like the Cold War back in the 60s and so on. Russia basically releases news statements decrying things. So this is what, when I was like a kid, this is what went on all the time. You know, the U.S. government would say, we're gonna launch a rocket into orbit. And Russia would say, oh, it's some extremist act that's, you know, and then we would, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Russia declared Facebook to be, and Meta, is an extremist organization. That's what they said. YouTube has blocked Russian state media channels, RT and Sputnik, on all their channels worldwide. And in response, Russia is now blocking Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, WhatsApp, you name it, anybody that crosses them, they block that coming into the country and so on. You know, Facebook allowed, and of course, all this is responded by Facebook saying they were going to allow people to post calls for killing Mr. Putin, who's the president of Russia, if you were unfamiliar with that. Russian propaganda organizations have been using Facebook and all these platforms to spread misinformation and propaganda as long as these organizations have been available, because, hey, that's what they do, and everybody else does it too. It's not just Russia. But the current set of volleys being fired back and forth has the tech oligarchs pitted against the Russian oligarchs. And the tech people are having to re-examine how they police content, with the rules changing pretty fast and pretty furious about what they're going to allow, when they're going to allow it, how much they're going to allow, and so on and so on and so on. I mean, we've been seeing this all the way back, you know, to the elections of 2016, with discussions about what should Facebook let you post, and, you know, can you post something about killing people? Can you post pornography, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So traditionally, the big players like Facebook and Twitter had always kind of had a hands-off approach, because that would be the obvious policy choice, right? As you say, we're just going to allow everything. You police yourselves. That way we're not responsible. We don't have any idea. We print a warning and we're good to go. But then, you know, that didn't work, and people were putting up stuff they didn't like. So they started writing rules that would prevent misinformation, allegedly. Not all misinformation, maybe, but they prevent some misinformation, et cetera. But this is a whole new ball game now. So they're banning state media, and they're allowing some hate speech, but not all hate speech. It's just whatever hate speech they decide to allow. So Facebook has allowed a suspension of their hate speech rules before. They suspended them when they were allowing Iranians to call for the assassination of the Iranian leader. And okay, and everybody kind of went, whoa, all right, well, okay, can we announce calls for assassinations of this person? Oh, no, not that one, but this one's okay. And now they're allowing Ukrainians to call for the assassination of Putin. Now, I don't know how they determine if you're a Ukrainian or an Iranian, and if an Iranian posts a call to assassinate Putin, is that allowed? And if a Ukrainian calls for the assassination of the prime minister of Grand Fenwick, is that allowed? I don't know. But anyway, all this creates a really complicated dilemma for the tech companies, who do have to decide at some point what is okay and what is not okay, and how they're going to figure it out. But it was a very interesting article, so you should check it out if you're interested in such things. Well, back in February, the Conti Group decided that they were pro-Russia, like some of our congresspeople and Tucker Carlson. And I usually don't say politics, but I'm sorry. Come on, folks. Quit supporting this guy. But anyway, they made a big announcement about their support of Russia, kind of like our congresspeople and Tucker Carlson have. But what they didn't really realize was that they had Ukrainian members, apparently, in the Conti Group. So the Ukrainian members decided to dox the group, and they released all kinds of information, which included source code and chats and so forth. And we reported on this earlier, but there's a new development in it. So BreachQuest actually took all this doxed information and went through it with a fine-tooth comb, and they found that Conti Group was run pretty much like any other high-tech company. They hire people, they fire people, they have interviews, applications, they have contractors and consultants, they have employees on salary. I mean, I guess they have like little Jimmy down in the mailroom dreaming of a life, coming into work in a hoodie as a big-time hacker one day. But according to the podcast in this article I attached, the company doesn't really think of themselves as evil, I guess. I mean, do evil people ever think they're evil? I mean, like, really, I always wondered that. Like, if you're like one of these really evil people, like these some of these shock broadcasters and people, do you get up in the morning and go, oh, time to go be evil today? Or do you just go, well, this is just what I do to make a buck? I don't know. But they do see themselves as a legitimate organization. They have Employee of the Month rewards, performance reviews, TPS reports. And apparently, like all those people that work down at Cocaine Limited, at least some of the employees don't even realize they work for a cybercrime company. Like, hey, mom, where do you work? Well, honey, I work for MrMurder.com. Murder for hire. I don't know what we do or anything like that. Mommy's just an attorney, so I shuffle paper around for Steve. You know, Mr. Steve Murder, the founder and CEO? Yeah. Anyway, Conti spent $6 million on salaries for 13 months of that is in the data, and they were paying monthly bonuses, training, all kinds of stuff. It's definitely worth checking this out because quite an interesting report. But apparently, Conti has such great training and documents, and one of the authors of this was actually recommending that cyber companies look at the training that they do at Conti because it was such high quality. And apparently, they also pay better than a lot of the rest of us get. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll check it out. Pandora ransomware attacked the Japanese company Denso via an office in Germany. So if you don't know what Denso is, and I had never heard of it before, it seemed like I'd heard the name somewhere, but I never really, you know, didn't really think about it. But Denso is a very large supplier of parts to Toyota, Mercedes, and Ford. And they have operations all over the world, probably somewhere near you, in fact. I found out there was an operation near some people that I knew, and they worked there. I was like, wow, I didn't know that. But anyway, according to Denso, the attack occurred after an illegal access on the 10th of March. Denso said they immediately air-gapped the compromised network in Germany and prevented any impact outside that facility. They said that production did not stop. However, Mitsui Busan Secure Directions reported that data related to the attack, which contained classified information from Toyota, was already being leaked on the dark web. So Pandora posted a message on Sunday where they claimed that they had stolen more than 157,000 items and that there was about 1.4 terabytes in total just from Toyota. Darktracer then tweeted a screenshot of the Denso leak and said that the dump included purchase orders, emails, non-disclosure agreements, tech drawings, and other classified data. This is the second time this year already that Toyota had been targeted in cyber attack, with a February attack which forced the closure of Toyota's operations pretty much completely in Japan for a while. Pandora is a fairly new ransomware group. They've only first started being seen in March, but according to some of this analysis and the fact that they use the old double extortion model, which is where you encrypt them and then you threaten to release the unencrypted stuff unless they pay up. One security researcher posted that they believe that Pandora is a rebranding of Rook ransomware, which is forked from all the way back to Babook. And if you don't know Babook, Babook was was one of the original double extortion groups way back when, not that long ago, really. But, you know, we say way back when, and we don't really mean like the 60s or anything. We mean like, you know, like 3 years ago. The number of mobile devices is continuing to skyrocket, and accordingly, the number of threats against them is also growing rapidly. And the types of threats are becoming more sophisticated, according to the Zimperium Annual Mobile Threat Report. In their report, they found nearly 25% of mobile devices encountered malware in that year, 13% had their data intercepted via a machine-in-the-middle attack, and 12% were redirected to malicious websites. More than 900 CVEs were reported in 2021 that directly affected mobile devices. The advent of bring your own device, work from home, etc., has really changed the corporate landscape. And no, I'm not going to bring back the nice, safe, secure mainframe and dumb terminals, even if you ask me really nice. The Deck 10 will return when the time is right, and all good mainframers will be whisked away to a golden shell where everyone has root, but no one actually needs it. Currently, 67% of the organizations in the report have BYOD policies, which is up from 40% before the pandemic. All that adds up to BYOD dangers, and the new threat surface is going to continue to grow. And yea, though you have doubted the sanctity of the mainframe, lo, you will be running around with your eyes on fire when wild, rabid wombats eating your bits begging for the return of the 360, 370. The mainframe operator will ignore your pleas, as always, even into the last line of C code at the end of scope. And yes, that sentence ends with a curly brace. Mm-hmm. And speaking of mainframes, he is famous for his collections of ASCII 2 porn, which include a semicolon and comma depiction of Hugh Hefner. He was the editor of the all ASCII edition of Playbit, the monthly magazine of ASCII 2 porn. Please welcome Jason Wood.
Hey, everybody. Good to be back with you, as always. I will confess, I tried really, really hard to find an article that didn't touch anywhere around Russia's war against the Ukraine. But frankly, that's all that's in the news. And in the end, I found this article by a threat post that caught my attention, laid out a hypothesis that made me stop and take a closer look. Now, the title of the article pretty much gives their point of view away. It was Cyber Crooks: Political Infighting Threatens the West. And it discusses basically the impact of some of the, turbulence and internal bickering and problems that are going on in the various criminal groups that have been trying to extort ransom, spam, whatever else they can come up with to get money out of victims. And basically the interruption this has caused them in their operations due to nobody getting along again. Now, the primary source for this article is a report by Accenture. And, you can go, if you check out the article, the threat post article in the show notes, you'll be able to find the link to the PDF of the Accenture report. Now, I have commented a number of times. I think the ecosystem around e-crime is pretty fascinating. You've got groups that specialize in initial access, folks that are focused on command and control, others on the ransomware side, the collection of the payments, really pretty much anything that you would need to monetize some kind of an intrusion into an organization. And, it's all over the place. I mean, some folks are just writing tools and that's all they do, and they just resell that off to somebody else. And that takes place on different forums and whatnot. And so I find this really interesting, and kind of to Doug's point about the Conti Group operating like a legitimate tech company, typical tech company with interviews and whatnot. I don't know. For some reason, this just seems really wild to have a criminal operation operate this much like just any other business. Now, a lot of times we like to think of some of these groups along national lines. And yeah, there's certainly a component of that, right? But it's, if you think of the Conti Group, it's not all the Russians. If you think of Revil, again, it's not all one country. These groups are really united by their desire to make money, interview people, and find people who help them basically profit better and find new ways to steal. This crosses lines of countries and whatnot. And, there have definitely been stories in the past where, somebody has a feud with somebody else in one of these groups and things happen, information starts getting leaked and whatnot. But pretty much they managed to work along and nobody is rocking the boat. This report by Accenture is basically focusing on the idea that, hey, this dynamic has really been upended by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Now, instead of just primarily a profit motive, nationalism for these individuals is now a bigger, more important thing to them. The Ukrainians don't want to work with Russians anymore. Russians don't want to work with Ukrainians anymore. And you see the bickering, the information being leaked out. ThreatPost quoted Accenture as saying this in the report: "Pro-Ukrainian actors are refusing to sell, buy, or collaborate with Russia-aligned actors, and increasingly attempting to target Russian entities in support of the Ukraine. However, pro-Russian actors are increasingly aligning with hacktivist-like activity, targeting enemies of Russia, especially Western entities, due to their claims of Western warmongering, end quote. Now, how is this playing out? Well, I mean, they talked about in this article, the ThreatPost article, one example of a marketplace for stolen data being taken offline after an admin announced any user found connecting from Russia will be banned. This is not a joke. We do not support the Kremlin. And ThreatPost reports that, you know, called the takedown of the site that occurred shortly after this as being done by unknown enemies, in quotes. So, you know, lots of dysfunction. This ecosystem is now thrown into disarray. All of this sounds like kind of good news, right? Because we've been spending a ton of time and energy trying to defend against these people. So more confusion to them, less cooperation. This seems like a good thing. But the report and the hypothesis really from Accenture is that, hey, there's a risk to organizations that are in Europe, the Americas, and any other place that has lined up against Russia. Basically, the authors are saying that because of this disarray, they are different threat groups are going to be more willing to work with some groups that have been shunned due to being more reckless in their targeting, basically causing too much heat to come down on them. Well, now that it's difficult, it's more difficult to get tools, and we've broken up the typical lines of how we want to operate, and we're angry because we've been sanctioned and we don't have McDonald's anymore. These groups are, you know, now being, you know, brought back into the fold. These more, like I said, reckless types of groups. And one of the examples they gave was the, you know, the ransomware group that went after Colonial Pipeline, caused a lot of heat politically and in the law enforcement area. So, you know, that group was kind of shunned a bit. Now things are starting to come back the other way. And so that, you know, is an issue with access to people with tools and capabilities. But also on top of that, that there these groups may decide because they're angry and because they don't like how things are going on, they feel like they're being picked on with all of these sanctions, that they're going to start potentially going after things that are more critical and would have been seen as off limits in the past. This is where you start thinking critical infrastructure. After all, the, you know, the West has sanctioned the heck out of Russia and has interfered with everything in their lives, crippled their country's economy. So why not return the favor? On top of the, you know, so now we, on top of a monetary motive, we've got this anger flying. This way they can enlist in their own efforts to fight for Mother Russia, if you will, kind of, and wave the flag and cause damage to other organizations and maybe keep the money coming in. Now, this seems to be a fairly logical argument to me and one that we should spend some time considering, if not for no other reason than what are we going to do if one of these groups comes calling on us? If I am in a field that or an organization that has systems that are fairly sensitive, think about this. You may find yourself being targeted just because of that impact. I've already commented on what I thought, you know, the likelihood of this is occurring, or at least officially sanctioned operations from being run against the West. But in this case, this is more organic. This is not directed by a government. These are just spooks deciding what they're going to do. So what can we do about this? Again, you know, I want to recommend being vigilant. This is not a time to sit back and wait and just hope that a blinky light box turns red and tells us that something has gone wrong. We need to be actively looking, monitoring our environments, looking at different types of activity that's occurring. Is it normal for this type of traffic to be leaving our environment? You know, what kind of emails are coming into our mail system? Are we getting more an uptick in spam or phishing-related attacks? And be ready to respond to that. You know, kind of play this game out a little bit. Make some plans on it. Because the last time you want to try and learn that is while you're under fire. Obviously, we've always been under attack to some point. You know, if you have a host on the internet, you see scanning of it all the time, but the tensions have heightened. And at least according to the Accenture report, our adversaries may become far less restrained in what they're willing to go after. So again, be on alert, be looking and actively monitoring your environment. Don't sit back and wait. If you want to go check this out, like I said, go to the show notes. You can find the link to the Threat Post article, which then will take you over to the Accenture report. So be ready, be prepared. If nothing else, it's a good exercise to practice for, you know, when you may come under fire anyhow for something totally unrelated.
All right. Thank you, Jason. I do want a blinky light box. I'm going to get one of those. That just,
everybody wants a blinky light box.
I want a blinky light box. It just tells me everything's fine. It's just like a green, a steady green. I think I could make one of those.
I'm pretty sure we could buy, we could build a box that just has green LEDs on it and have a placeholder for a red one, but just never wire it up.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You could sell a ton of those. I mean,
I think so. It's cheap.
Yeah, no, they used to sell those. They were like multi-million dollar rigs that they put up there that were supposed to tell you how the condition of your company currently. It's like, right, yeah, sure. Of course. Thank you. And finally, crypto ATMs are a sort of up-and-coming thing. I think I actually saw one recently. And, you know, if you want to trade in your crypto and you need a way to get cold, hard cash to buy a case of Mickey's Big Mouth on the way home from the local, you know, from the way home and the local bodega just won't accept Boingo coins in payment. Well, what are you going to do? You got to hit up the crypto ATM, right? Trade your 100 million Boingo coins for 36 Doge coins, swap that for 0.0001092 Bitcoins, and then ask for the whole $4 in cash with a $2 service fee. Not that I've done this or anything. Do they still make Mickey's Big Mouth? I mean, you know, you got to have those. That's just part of it. Anyway, I mean, nothing says 3:30 in the morning like a case of Mickey's, right? And a bag of pork rinds, and you go sit in your, yeah, no, it'll all be illegal. Don't do that. No, it's just, nope. Anyway, crypto ATMs have been springing up. And last Friday, the Financial Conduct Authority in the United Kingdom said no more. The memo from the FCA, as it is known, published an official bulletin called Warning on Illegal Crypto ATMs Operating in the UK, and went on to claim that there were no legal correctly registered crypto ATMs anywhere in the UK. So warnings to anybody out there that's using crypto ATMs. And they said all of them had to be shut down. Now, I personally think they're fighting the rising tide. But, you know, for now, anyway, you'll just have to go get your Boingo coins the old fashioned way with your cell phone. And that's the news. Thanks, Jason. I'll see you on Friday for the wrap-up show at 11, new time.